Good evening, everyone. It's 7 o'clock. It's Wednesday evening, and we are on the American Book of the Dead. This is our fourth class in opening up this. This really is a classic, I would
opening
say.
Up a class in a classic.
We are in the fourth class of a classic, and it's something that hit the streets in 73, if I remember correctly. Is that about right, Ivan? And was being used before it was made public, and then it went through a whole publishing history, and here we are with it. You might be asking yourself, like, how did it come to be that you are here now with this book in front of you? And I would just say that part of it is not an accident. It's not an accident that for this evening, you're being exposed to this particular teaching. And our job is together, everybody that's here, everybody that's online, everybody that's on the chat, everybody that's on the phone, constitutes the whole of what we bring together through our focused attention and intention. Is Harry on? Harry, are you up on, Joe? And the idea is that gradually, by allowing, there's a particular kind of a formal surrender that goes on when we enter into our group intention. And through that, we're able to, as you can just now notice, we can begin to form something that we can all participate in. Okay?
And I think the word form is very relevant here, because we're going to be speaking in a certain way about the mold that we have is a human biological machine that we bring with us, and the spores, the molds of spirit, and the mold of the awareness, and especially the mold of concentrated attention. This is where you can actually grow something that can be. I've got this spore image in my hands. I don't know if you can see that, but that's what rises out of a group effort of this type.
The we can recall the American Book of the Dead is the book that we're studying. It was written by E.J. Gold. What E.J. did way before it was now much more common, I wouldn't say common, but it's out there, is to take what he knew as the book that's called The Great Liberation Through Hearing in the Bardos, and he translated it into an American tome that we can more easily access as Westerners. And quite frankly, I don't think, maybe there's a lot that could be done with it in a certain way, but in another way, I haven't seen anything that quite touches it yet. Is it usable is the idea, and we struggle with the question, how is it, I think we may have even left off there last time, mm-hmm. How is it that, first of all, how do you read to someone who's dead?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of bizarre, mm-hmm. to think about it, really,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you're dead, right? Where are their ears? And then the second thing, the other flip side of it is, how do they hear,
mm-hmm.
the darn thing? And I think there are answers to those. There's specific answers to those, okay? And it has to do with many, many, many aspects of what we're going to be covering. And we're in this together. For this evening, together, we're in it forever.
Lumped.
We're in it together, lumped forever for this moment.
Exactly.
And I'm recalling, and Ivan might have to help me out here, the great poem by John Donne, No Man is an Island.
Yes.
And what he talks about in the poem, he says, if a chunk of sand gets washed away from the island of England, England is diminished at that moment. And if the bell is tolling for someone who has passed, or is quite ill. They may not know who the bell is tolling for, but since we're all connected, which is now being discovered more by the quantum physicists, we're all connected. And then John gives us the notice. He says, you need not ask for whom that bell tolls, because it tolls for thee. So we are a group of individuals working together. We're a group of individuals working together to discover ways and means to make the great liberation through hearing in the Bardos a pragmatic effort for all of us. Okay? So our job tonight and over the next several weeks is to try to create actual groundwork for each of us. So we're doing what I call the slow reading of it, because we're trying to make sure that we're developing ways and means for each and every one of us. Okay? So we'll work on that a little bit tonight.
Well, you know, it would be fine to start where we left off, or it would also be fine to leap ahead and come back.
No, it's a good idea to start where we were. Okay. We'll go there for a little, and then we're going to leap ahead.
All right.
It's a way of getting ourselves used to the water.
Sure. Sticking your toe in the water.
We're sticking our toe in the water.
Yes.
We're getting ourselves used to the temperature of it before we decide to leap in. And we'll be able to swim better at that point. So do you want to get us started, Pat?
Yes, I will repeat our paragraph from last time. Paragraph 2 from page 24. What is called the mind in ordinary intercultural translations of higher ideas is simply the result of the activities of the primary attention of the being, the cosmic nature of which is voidness, which is called in this treatise the essential self, that which is one's own, the deepest self existing only temporarily dependently upon the biological self.
So we need questions. We need questions and pauses and queries so we know where we are together. Each question is just a spark that helps us expand where we are. One of the primary problems with an untrained individual who has not inculcated within himself first-hand knowledge of the subtle feelings and sensations of the macro-dimensional domains of the labyrinth. So what the author is posing to us, he's saying, first of all, he's saying, there is a macro dimension. Macro in the sense of above, more inclusive, different than, macro dimensions. And so to create a particular kind of tension that allows us to begin to see between these spots, we're looking to try to see in between. Last time we talked about the moment of transit,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
We talked about the moment of transit. When you are at the end of a experience or the end of a cycle or you're the end of an idea and it ends, a new cycle begins. The link between those sessions in a certain way is the bardo of that moment. Like we talked about using the doorway exercise from Practical Work on Self, and we went on about it, how you move from one space to another. The point is to begin to become aware of this. I'm wondering, did anybody have a chance to begin working with that concept? like moving from one space to another, is that something that you practice a little bit during the week? Because it's the in-between moments where for a moment you're not on safe ground.
Exactly. You're in between.
You're in between, and that's what we want to not only inculcate within ourselves, but as E.J. Gold is telling us right here, he says, the untrained individual, well, this is what we're talking about, is becoming trained.
Mm-hmm.
It takes effort. This is not something where you're going to hear an idea and then suddenly, it could occur like that, but it generally doesn't.
Well, hearing the idea will allow you to be receptive to what you might need to develop in yourself in order to further the hearing of that idea. So it's sort of like you're going to let the idea come to you, and then you're going to go with it and move along with it as you possibly can, and that will allow you to take that idea in even more. It's a progressive, I don't know what that form is, but you know, you come towards it and you go along with it, and then you bring it back in, and then you flow out with it again.
Self-initiation. So, mutual initiation.
Thank you. Mutual initiation, which in the rest of this paragraph, the description of which is a perfect description of mutual initiation.
Correct.
So it says, as David read already for us, which during the lifetime are hidden under the dominant organic feelings, perceptions, and sensations of organic life, is to actually notice the unusual non-organic nature of the macrodimensional environment without dropping into blackout, waking up only after it's all over. So there's a whole bunch of clues right there.
Okay, so let's talk about what is blackout.
There you go. Let's start
blackout.
There.
Virtually everything we do, we're going to interpret in terms of the safety of the machine. The machine isn't actually safe at all, but at least there's no place like home. There's no place like home.
Hey, it feels good to me, okay?
It feels good to me right now.
Yeah.
So an example of blackout, I've used this example a number of times during the classes. We've had a number of invocational dinners, invocational talks, where EJ will begin presenting an idea, or there's a panel. And I remember one, and I verified it with Claude a few weeks ago. They were actually talking about incense and higher spaces and using that as a tool, as a vehicle. And it was a warm afternoon or evening, I can't remember, might have gone into that. And it was very intense. And it got more intense and more intense. So what happened is I happened to be working the cameras and the changer, the switcher. And so I was able to notice a lot of this. And gradually people would fall asleep. They just nod out. It wasn't intrusive. They didn't leave the room. There wasn't some big event. They fell asleep. And so they were no longer in that space.
Exactly.
When I investigated it later with others, part of it was that the intensity of the vibrational tone was such that those individuals chose not to be there.
Exactly.
They left.
Yeah.
But they left in a socially appropriate way. They didn't get up and mess up the space, so to speak. Now, how does that refer to us here? Well, notice how your attention works. And when we're talking about some of the things, particularly in about two pages, notice what happens to your attention as these ideas, as all we're doing is revealing the ideas that are written in this book. And as we're revealing it, notice when your attention is suddenly, you're thinking about, oh yeah, I think, you know, I will have that roast for tomorrow at dinner. It's, you know, I've got it. I've got to take it out at 10 to defrost it. And I've got the vegetable. Yeah, it's going to be a perfect. And suddenly, you're there.
Or actually,
not there.
You're not there.
You're not there in this space that is being created by this group energy here to work with us. You went somewhere else because you needed to step out of the room for a minute. Okay.
Blackout is a word that refers to this example that David has given. And it also says, another clue, waking up only after it's all over. So it gives the allowance of blackout and then waking up as part of what does occur in the macro-dimensional spaces. It's referencing it right there.
Yeah.
Yes, that's what happens.
So part of our individual work is to start notating when that occurs. When in these types of spaces, how does it work for you that you drop off?
Mm-hmm. What is the form it takes? Just note it.
At this point, you just note it. We're gathering data now. It's similar to the work we've done in the past with self-observation of the mechanisms of the machine. Now we're saying, okay, now I'm a Bardo Voyager. How does this Voyager, what does it do? How does it operate? Where does it come alive when I hear something? And where does it diminish? What are the topics that when it is brought up, it recedes into the background or comes forth and shares what it's supposed to share because that's its post at the time, whatever that means.
How is its nature made manifest in the various spaces, as, for instance, the one that we're sitting in at the moment?
Susan, are you okay with any working the log a little bit if something comes up?
I am okay, and we do have questions.
Can you please help us with that?
Yes, I was just pausing till the right moment.
Thank you.
So Gnostic Man, he actually has a couple of questions. How can the voidness become dependent on a biological machine?
Did we just read that somewhere? Who asked the question?
This is Gnostic Man, and then he says, how can the voidness be a self? Does the expression essential imply a highly ratified form of materiality?
Stand up, turn around, and then sit down again, Gnostic Man. That's how the voidness becomes manifest. You happen to be here to ask that question. The voidness, you happen to manifest in a certain way. There's 7 billion people that didn't manifest here in this class, in this evening, working with this book with other fellow voyagers. But you did. And so the voidness has an opportunity to peek out for a second. We aren't at the point yet where I am that I am, but we have this great opportunity as a living human being. We've been given a machine, and we've worked through a lot of the concepts of awakening the machine and self-observation. Now, we're looking at another phase of it. Does that help, Susan?
It does. Now we have a funny. How did the Tibetan monks find themselves in the Wild West Balloon?
How did they find themselves in the Wild West Balloon?
They went through the Bardo.
Very good.
Oh.
Very good.
Who offered that?
In the Wild West. Saloon. In the Wild West.
Who?
Saloon. And it was by Mark Roach.
Ah.
Yay.
That's what I guessed. Thank you, Mark.
Now we have a comment by Silverdale.
Okay.
We are a trinity of three-dimensionally opposite co-equal forces. We are a trinity of three diametrically opposite, co-equal forces with function heterogeneously. One force is our organic materiality. Second force is our essential self, a product of the void. The third force is our self-initiated effort to blend the two forces.
And so we read that, we hear this from our guide, Silverdale.
Yes.
Now, my question to each person here tonight, how do you put that into action then?
Yes.
What's the last phrase that you said, George?
The third force is our self-initiated effort to blend the first two forces.
So self-initiated effort. Okay, so the question that should be on your tongue at the moment is, well, what do I do? Give some hints about what to do, like later on tonight, right now. Give hints about what to actually do.
Are there responses over there?
There's a few more comments.
Okay, go ahead, Susan.
Mark Roach says, in the Norton Street videos, blackout is equated with leaving the space of our awareness, of our identity with the essential self.
There you go.
And then that's all we have here.
Okay, good.
I think you're going to find, maybe Ivan can read this one. I think you're going to find the clue, the specific in this next paragraph here.
I'll go ahead and read it.
Yeah, you read it. Yeah, because
a normal human primate, given the usual education and routinized life experience, just doesn't have the slightest idea of what's going on, where he is, what's happening around him, his feelings and sensings, his sensations, the events proceeding all around him, not even one millionth of it. We can't expect to notice that anything is different in the macro dimensions of the labyrinth, when the only difference is the quality of the experience and not the imagery. Okay? So what do you think our author is meaning by that? What does he mean by the quality is different? What does that mean? Quality? What? Maybe it's a typo. Dan is saying the feeling of it is different. Therefore, the feeling of it is different.
You know, that could be that it's like having a web image and 1,200 for another user.
Paraphrase for them to hear.
So I've been saying that maybe it's a difference in frequency, in the difference of frequency, right?
Yeah, you have the image is the same, but the resolution can have a huge
The image can be the same, but the resolution could be very different.
Mm-hmm.
quality of the image. Finally. So Lost Horizon, formerly known as Dan, says that it's the vibratory sensation. What's the name? What was the true name of the book in the Tibetans again? What did they call it? The Great Liberation Through Hearing in the Bardos. How does the dead guy hear?
Exactly.
How does the dead guy hear? Has to be some sort of vibration, yes. And then, because, you know, I'm going to divert just for a second, okay?
You have my full permission. Go deep.
No,
go deep.
George, you were down here once, and remember we asked DJ, how did you even write this thing? Do you remember that?
I remember that. I think I asked the question.
And what was his answer?
David, you would probably recall better than me.
That's called sidestepping.
More accurately than me.
Prabhasambhava, when he manifested, brought forth this writing. And they say that he left it as what's called a turma, a treasure, that was found later by Karmalingpa, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And then it was actually written down,
mm-hmm.
and then these Tibetan lamas would read the darn thing.
Yep.
Now, how did they read it? And is Starananda on?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, she's got a whole class on that question, and I'm going to touch on it in just a minute because it's critically important, and I'm going to answer that question, George, in just a minute. Is the proper reading of the text from these lamas, in the manner in which they taught, was to allow the vibratory sensation that came through in the original giving of it to pass through them as the reader. They had to become not themselves to do the reading. Okay?
It became a channel.
They had to practice to become a channel. It's exactly right. And then if they did it right, and Judy, you remember the end of the very first paragraph in Tales, right? Last in that paragraph. Do you remember what it is?
Let me take it out. Which paragraph are you referring to?
Paragraph 1. You know what I mean, George?
Are you talking about in the introduction or in the arousing of thought?
When it's, I don't know, chapter 1.
Well, the first paragraph is about the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy
Ghost.
That's
right. That's what I'm looking for. Can you read that for us, please?
Which one, the first paragraph?
No, that what you just, the phrase.
The invocation.
Yes.
Oh, the invocation. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and in the name of the Holy Ghost. Amen.
So, the skill of reading that means the true way of reading that is that the reader has to become that, in a sense, and transmit that. So, how
can
does
I elucidate on that, David?
No. Not right now. Not at this moment, please. So, the true reader is... their job is to allow the vibratory sensation. Now, the person that's dead and doesn't have any ears anymore, to the extent that they are attuned to this reading, are able to hear. They're able to hear. So when we're sitting there at lunch and we ask this question, because it was always, I've asked everybody that's been involved with the publishing of the darn thing, and no one knew, well, how would you possibly translate to Tibetan? I mean, he doesn't know Tibetan. So his answer was, well, I winged it. Well, if you've read the Clear Light Prayer, which most of us here have, that's quite a job. So I think that what happened when he re-offered it, in a sense, it's like a booster. So there's a vibratory sensation going along throughout history,
mm-hmm.
right? Starting
yeah.
in approximately 600 A.D. or CE, current era. CE, that was given, and then it unfolded through the centuries.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think it was reactivated in a certain way vibratorily.
Yeah.
So how do we practice? How do we practice this material? We have to find ways and means to put ourselves in the in-between state. Because when you can hang out there, that vibratory sensation starts to work on you in a certain way.
We have a comment.
Yeah, go ahead, Susan.
It's from Sylvia Richardson, Star.
Yeah?
And the feeling that comes with reading is an entire different feeling than what is felt in the ordinary. It is as if coming from another higher part of self.
So we want to practice this so that we can get into that sense, that higher sense of self. Yeah, I'm not in a point where I want to distinguish between higher and lower or anything like that at the moment.
But you were talking about the vibratory.
That's correct.
Qualities. So she's saying, yeah, that's a completely different vibratory atmosphere, vibration experience than me reading fairy tales to my daughter.
It's very different vibratory sensation than reading, let's say, fairy tales to our children. And Ivan's right on that point. And the other thing, there's a more subtle sensation about it, and it's becoming aware of that subtlety that I think is part of our work now.
That's exactly it.
Okay?
We have,
and I think we're
going
to say
we have to allow for whatever necessary changes are, and they're pretty subtle changes, but they have mostly to do with developing our intense appreciation for qualitative change.
Qualitative
change. And that must be practiced.
And
it does not grow by itself. It's not one of these fine things that you're blessed with. It is something that you have to build. You must work it. It is a muscle. You must grow it.
Gnostic man, does that help answering your question a little bit?
I do have other comments.
Go ahead, Susan.
Star says there is a very subtle difference.
Yes.
Hold on, my computer's. I'm sorry. There's a very subtle difference. You have to be aware and awake to notice.
Yes.
And then Gnostic Man says, quality refers to sensing of the space or mood.
Yes, okay. Yeah, but when we're talking about mood here, we're talking about it in a very unique manner, right?
Absolutely.
We're distinguishing the mood of the essential self, in a sense, from the mood of the mechanicality of the machine.
And antimatter?
Yes?
She said, then Jesus said, whoever has ears to hear, let them hear.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's what we're talking about.
That's exactly.
That's what we're talking about. That's good. So we're developing our hearing. Thank you, antimatter. That's the whole point of this, is we're developing our hearing. So I just wanted to make that point about the vibratory sensation. And now, Judy, can you expand on that just a moment, please?
Yeah, briefly. I think what's really essential here on this first page of Beelzebub's Tales is he's telling us that he's able to intone this invocation, and it's his hope that we will be able to intone it and in the future. In other words, he's telling us that these three data that we have, the three forces, that when we develop them and refine them and bring them to this more refined state and they function together, that's when we will be able to fully intone all of the forces at once. So this speaking about the quality of the vibration is really essential here, because that's what he's talking about.
So part of, thank you, Judy. And so part of what we're trying to do is lift, you know, use our barbells and lift our, develop the muscles of that quality, which clearly we don't obviously do during regular life, do we?
No.
There's no need to. This is not, there's no end game here. Well, you, if you do this, you get the job, you know, or anything like that. There's no end game if you do this, and then, you know, you get the big prize.
But you do get the big prize.
Well, but you don't get the, we're talking about finding a clear and distinct discernment between the machine and, in this literature, called the essential self.
Mm-hmm.
Now, part of it is to create and allow that there to be a, what am I trying to say?
Membrane?
Not a membrane, a struggle. A,
oh, you want to have the...
Between the two, a...
Yeah.
A struggle, you know, like struggle with sorcerers, you know, that
yeah.
You want there to be this tension, that's the word it's kind of, there's a tension between the two. We are in the world, but we're not of it. So let's discover the fact that we're not of it.
That's the discovery is the discovery is not one that we can determine, but it is one that we can appreciate if we have developed the skills of discernment. You cannot set the stage for the discovery, but you can have developed your awareness, your intuition, your sensitivity, maybe even your calling, in a sense, where you notice things and you feel things and you have a lookout. You have a lookout for what might be the unknown,
so
the undiscovered.
Have you ever done, you know the term orienting?
Oh, yes.
This has to do with
orienteering. Math. Yes, I have done it, and I love it.
This has to do with learning how to read a map.
Yeah.
Okay.
Moving by map only, not by directions.
So the analogy is that we have studied the map vigorously. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You study the map,
mm-hmm.
and then you get on the airplane and you're launched into the jungle, and you get dropped out.
Yeah.
And suddenly you find yourself on the land, and you've landed, and you have to figure out, now it's suddenly different because you're actually there.
You have to get your bearings.
So what do you first have to do? You have to get your bearings.
Yeah.
So that's the first skill that we need
to
develop, and that's a skill that has to do with the development of sensing. And let's just read the next sentence. That's why we need to train ourselves to feel and sense and be aware of ourselves and our environment. And skipping ahead, sensitive to change on a much deeper level than the organic mind and its primate level senses and values. So EJ is still saying, he's noting this struggle between the machine. We're not, this class is going to end, and what's going to happen is we're going to fall back into what we always fall back into, and that's the struggle we have to. We have to find out where we are, and then we're going to see we're in great peril. And we must, with vigor, find our tools of orientation so we can find out where we are. And that's the practice that is given to us. That's the opportunity that's presented to us. Because some of us are still alive in the room here. I'm not sure of.
Some of us are definitely
on the other side, believe me.
In two places at once.
And two places at once.
At least.
So since we have a physical body and our karmic winds have figured out some way that suddenly we're all here together.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah. Judy is in this weird place called something Florida or some darn place.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody knows where that is. But here we are, right? How did we all find each other tonight? The point is that we are here, and so we develop those skills, those mapping skills. And that's what we're going to learn as we go through the rest of the book here. Susan, how are we doing?
We're doing good. Nausicaan did respond, and he said that, yes, it was very helpful to distinguish quality as vibratory rate from imagery.
Yeah, keep working on that question about the void, though. Okay? That's a good question, and I'm not sure if I was flippant about it in the way I answered or not. But I really do, I mean, here you are, buddy, okay? I mean, this is a pretty cool thing if you ask me. I mean, we're actually, we have the opportunity to do something about it now, before we die. Because we have the opportunity, a very small number of people here have the opportunity to practice how to do something before we die. Because maybe then we'll have mapping tools that we might not have had on the last go-round.
Yeah.
Right?
That's what we're all working towards, is the development of those tools and the sharing of the ones that have been discovered.
Yeah, so that's why we work as a group together, because if you find something, Nausicaan, that works for you as a way of getting in touch with a particular space, maybe you're going to share it with us, okay? You can either put it on the website, or you can send it to me, and then I'll put it up or whatever. But the point is that we have group mind working at the moment, and with that group mind, then we should work to do something to mm-hmm. share it with each other then. I am going to jump ahead now, okay?
Can I read a couple more comments?
One before. Leap over here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
So, wait, hang on. Let Susan go ahead.
Oh, yes, go ahead.
So,
back to some of this, too.
In response to an earlier comment, Mark Roach said conflict.
Yeah, like a conflict that we want to maintain that conflict. It's not easy. It's not what we normally do.
No, we usually go to ease it.
We want
to
ease the conflict.
And smooth it. The opposite of what would be helpful for you. Conflict has an incantation to it, which sometimes implies
nice.
That there's an activity that you must be involved in. And actually, it's not an activity. It's a very neutral space that you want to allow the
yes.
struggle to be alive in
yeah.
you. And not fight one side or the other. It's allow the struggle to be in existence. That's the tricky part. Don't interfere.
And it's called I am not that.
Exactly.
You know, you're just in it, right? Go ahead, Susan.
Scafudi said soul group.
Well, it is a soul group, and to the extent that we are working together, then we develop that. Exactly right. Good. Thank you.
And then one last from Antimatter. She said it's like a Stephen Wright joke. Right now I'm having amnesia and deja vu at the same time. I think I've forgotten this before.
Oh, I remember that one.
What kind of joke is that?
Stephen Wright.
Oh.
You are on tonight, Auntie. Our dear Auntie.
And Scofuti says, dive into the confusion.
Yeah. And maintain it. And that is so not the machine, is it? It's not the machine. The machine doesn't do. The machine looks to, you know, mitigate it.
Yeah.
Sort it out. That's how the English put it, I guess. Okay, we're going to jump ahead because I want to do a little exercise. And I'm acknowledging what you're saying. I want to jump ahead anyway. Let's go to the top of page 27. How are we going to do this? Maybe I wish we had Ivan's voice, but I'd rather have it here.
No.
What, he has a mic. It's
no,
to get
I know. A, I, it's a chair.
Okay.
Sure.
You read, I'll read,
change.
Read,
yeah.
And then we'll go back
yeah.
like that.
Okay.
If you haven't, top of page 27, if you haven't had any training in the feeling and sensing exercises, and you are in doubt about whether you're in the macro dimensions of the labyrinth or not, here are some suspicious places to look. The chances are very good that you are in the macro dimensional domains of the labyrinth if you suddenly, without segue, find yourself
in a bus or train or plane or any other form of public transportation.
I'm going to call a break right now. Go ahead and change, though. This may or may not work. No. I forgot to give an instruction. And the instruction is, as the readers read through this, just notate if there's something that catches you that is of interest or importance, okay? I'll read the next. Oh, no, you go ahead and read the next one and then change.
Compulsively walking from room to room in a house or apartment, and you can't seem to stop moving or to reduce the restlessness and agitation, yet you are not actually in an anxiety state.
In a small chamber with someone whose face keeps changing subtly, as if the light is playing upon it.
Alone for long periods of time in an older hotel room or motel room.
Continually going into a bathroom or a kitchen, or back and forth from bathroom to kitchen.
Waking up suddenly from a nightmare or a dream about yourself having just had a different biological machine, not necessarily of the earth varieties.
Driving in a car for a long period of time.
Watching a clock that moves impossibly slowly.
In an older theater with balconies and basement, watching a film that seems familiar to you, but you can't remember having seen before. Usually the film will have an unusual amount of senseless violence or seem very religious or both.
Getting a phone call in the middle of the night, especially from someone you know is dead.
We're going to go ahead and break then. Go ahead. So, and it goes on. I mean, there's another couple of pages of these things, and this reminds us of Appendix C as well, which we're going to get into.
The rebirth
state we're going to get into. But I was just wondering, how did that affect you? Or did, how did that, what happened when you were listening to the readers deliver some of those spaces, if anything? Anybody here either?
When Pat said transportation, something happened.
Okay. Can you say a teeny bit about what happened, Susan?
It just brought on a different feeling of the transporting.
Okay.
It's more a feeling from taking it from the normal. And it just seems like that's what we're doing, is transporting all the time.
Yes.
For me,
okay.
David, it really was the great liberation by sound, because as I listened, I actually began to imagine myself in a macro dimension that just happened to be clothed with an organic form.
So just the tonality of, in a sense, and these are individuals who are very good readers. It opened the space for Silverdale such that he could begin to sense the dichotomy, the duality, and yes, I am in the macro dimension. Hard to stay there, isn't it? Go ahead. Anybody else, Susan?
Okay, Judy here. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. The one that I reacted to was the face changing subtly, as if the light is playing on this. And I see now, I've had this experience of actually watching a face change and kind of forgotten about it. But
okay.
I was...
Let's pause on that moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's... It,
what the part I want to underline there, Judy, is I've had the experience before, but I've kind of forgotten about it. That's a very important aspect of what we're going to be working on during the next several months, is, in my opinion, we're going to be recovering memories that we've all had already. And if you've done a reading for somebody in the 49 days, you get this haunting sense of knowing what it's talking about.
Well, the interesting thing is that I've had this experience many times, and I still forget it.
And so we have to understand what it means. Here's an individual who's an experienced player. I've had this experience many times, and then I still forget it. What does that mean? And I still forget it. We don't need to answer it. Go ahead, Susan.
Okay, happiness said many spaces familiar.
Good.
And then Mujer de la Estrada.
Yes.
I felt like I passed through each one of those corridors as you read.
Good.
Each one felt very different.
You might want to take a look at Appendix and start working with that material. And you're a particular kind of a voyager. And these are portals. Okay. I don't know another book on the planet where somebody has written down pragmatic exercises of how to work in the macro dimensions. I'd love to see that book, but here's one right in front of us. So we're practical voyagers. We have our Boy Scout uniforms on, and we have our compass. We have a compass in our hand and our map in our backpack. That's what we're doing right now. And Cristal is going to knock it out of the park, because when you're in a particular kind of surrender, each one you will have remembered.
Mm-hmm.
You might be more partial to some than the others, because maybe something else went on there. Anything else, Susan?
Yes, Winnipeg 9 said fighting to stay awake and pay attention in those spaces.
Very good. Very good. The power of confession is enormous. Go ahead.
It is the thread that binds the group.
Thank
it can't
you.
Be done otherwise.
Cannot be done otherwise, she says.
I want to share this
Go
paragraph
ahead.
At the end here. Something very little known in the East and definitely unknown in the West is that the voyage in the labyrinth continues all the time. The labyrinth underlies the organic world. The vibrations of the macro dimensions of the labyrinth are dominated by the organic vibrations, which are heavier and easier to sense through biological machine and human awareness than the direct but subtle perceptions of the dimensional domains. That's what we're aiming for, is to be able to allow the direct but subtle perceptions of the dimensional domains to be in our awareness. That's what we want.
And that's part of it. That's the purpose of the class. That's what inspired me to want to do this so much after all these years. It's time to actually, in a sense, put my stake down in the ground, my staff, and I'm standing for this.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Let's just say that it's worth the stretch. There's no question about it. Susan, are there any more comments?
There's one more by Antimatter.
Okay.
It said Claude's book, Handbook for the Recently Deceased. It covers the same turf.
Correct. Yeah. No question about it. So what will unfold is, we still have more introductory material to go through, and we're going to go through the rest of this chapter, and then we're going to hit the Six Realms chapter. And then we're going to get into the heart of the readings. By then, we'll be ready for that meal.
We'll be a little bit more glued together.
And we'll be more glued together, but we'll be ready for that meal. Consider the concept that we are a small number of individuals, and we've come together here in a certain way to fulfill a post. Because we are able to do it, because we are here, there's an indication that we are able to do it. We don't know when that skill set will be called upon. Okay? Not sure when. We are planting seeds. This is something I wrote earlier. Okay.
Yeah.
We are planting seeds with each effort towards this understanding. At some point, if our machine can stand aside, those seeds will sprout, maybe even at the right time. The key is to populate our tool chest with these treasures.
Yep.
How's that?
I like it.
Okay.
I like it.
So that's our job, in a sense, is to hold this for our fellow travelers, and we're not quite sure what. We might find ourselves at a Halloween party next to a fire.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly people come up to us asking us strange questions, and we're the only one that's there that could answer.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? That's because you were prepared. So, how are we doing? How you doing?
Well, I'm just wondering if there's something that Ivan was going to tell us.
You okay, Ivan?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Are we doing okay? In this class, we're
okay.
Doing all right?
There's something everybody can look at when they're going to take a peek at this Schedule C. Oh, that's not right, is it?
Appendix C.
That's
your tax return.
That's it. You get into the Appendix C. They are posted, let me say, in a certain style. They have the title in bold and the descriptive in lowercase unbold text. And the reason I'm cluing you into this is because if you would allow yourself to address each one when you look at them, just the title comes to you. I'm not going to say any of them. The title gets stated by you. Preferably aloud, if you would allow yourself that. Title gets stated, and then you pause. There's a little colon there. There's a little space. Just allow the space before you read further into the description. It is a discipline that will stand you well in this book in many, many ways. I'm giving you something you can use now that you will need later.
And I want to suggest, the deer, if you do this exercise, your poet may come out. It struck me the other day when you sent what you sent, and I forgot to tell you that.
Yeah.
But now that Pat opened the space back up for that, consider that as part of a practice. Put those up on the site. I'll have a separate page. I'm not quite sure yet whether I'm going to have a page for each of the noted rebirth stations. Probably what I'll do is I'll have a long list, and then if somebody comments on a particular one, I may allow that to open up a new page for that particular work. So. We're way over time, Pat.
Yeah, well, I wasn't in any time when I got here, and I'm not over it now.
There you go.
That's how it goes. Yes, dip right in there, nice and deep.
So thank you, Susan, for reading.
You're welcome.
Okay, and thank you, everybody, for coming again this evening. And we look forward to seeing you next Wednesday at 7.
Yes, and let's test our glue.
We're going to test our glue. And bring stories from the road, okay? That's what we're looking for. So thank you, and